Welcome to Heart of Iowa on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host for today, Greta Anderson, and we have a very exciting show. One of the very exciting things about it is that we are in our new studio doing a live show, which is not the way we usually do it for Heart of Iowa. So welcome to the show, and today we're going to be discussing First Amendment Days, which are taking place on the ISU campus and in Ames throughout the week. Our first guest is Mark Witherspoon. He is a professor at the Greenlee School of Journalism at Iowa State. He is one of the founders, or spearheaded the First Amendment Day movement, I guess you could hear it at ISU. ISU had a First Amendment Day back in 2003, and then a number of other universities and colleges have taken our lead and developed such days themselves. Mark, can you tell us what the purpose of First Amendment Day or days is?
Well, it's to educate the community, Iowa State and Ames communities, about the First Amendment. And that comes because the First Amendment Center in Vanderbilt has done surveys on the First Amendment since 1997. And every year they ask two questions. They ask more, but they ask two questions every year. And one of those is, can you name all five freedoms in the First Amendment? And the other question is, do you think the First Amendment gives us too much freedom? And when I was asked to put on a national event by the director of the Greenlee School back then, John Amy, I was studying First Amendment education, and I came across these surveys, and I was shocked that, you know, only 3% of Americans could name all five freedoms in the First Amendment.
Okay, I'm gonna just jump in right there. I want our listening audience to participate in this show a little bit and see if they can be among the 3 or 4% elite by naming to themselves, writing down on a piece of paper, the five freedoms that are part of the First Amendment. Mm-hmm. So the answers will be given away in just a couple minutes. So it gives you time to scratch your head and think about it. So tell me about the first Amendment Day back in 2003.
The first Amendment Day was a joyous event. I loved it. It was only one day, and it only had two events. And the first event was what we called Feast on the First Amendment, where we got a bunch of food from Hickory Park. So we let people, we made the students come by giving them food. So
of course.
You had over 900 people hanging out, eating food. But the other thing was, we let them feast on all five of their freedoms. We had soapbox debates, and we had Republicans and Democrats arguing with each other, and we had conservative Christians and atheists arguing with each other. And it was a fun time had by all, would be a good way to describe it. And then the evening event was Freedom Sings, which is a musical multimedia extravaganza Vanderbilt is in Nashville, so you have all these Nashville musicians, and they brought in 7 or 8 of them, I can't remember exactly how many, and they played songs that had been either banned or censored throughout the years, going back all the way to 1791 to the first song that had been banned.
Well, that sounds really cool. And your mention of Nashville reminded me that I probably should forecast our next guest, who's going to come in the second half of the hour. April Glazer has a Nashville connection. She is also an activist at the Electronic Frontier Foundation, very active in combating NSA spying. And she also was an activist that helped open up the airwaves for community radio. So we are very pleased to have her, and also a student, Nick Kinkle, who's been working with you. So that's to look forward to. Now, Mark, Nick has been working with you, and maybe you could talk a little bit about student involvement in the process of bringing First Amendment days together.
That's the whole point of education. And various audiences and various communities have various ways of we educating people. The ones who educate the most are the students who work all year putting this thing on. And Nick and Brad Deedle came in several months ago and said, hey, what if we do this? And we go, well, that sounds great. So started the process there, and I'll let Nick tell that story. But that's the key, is they learn more about the First Amendment and I think appreciate their freedoms more than any of the other audiences. And then you have the people who come in and other student groups that we worked with. One year we even had the theater department putting on sword fights just for fun, just during the Feast on the First. And then you have the people who come in and feast and come to the events, and they learn about the First Amendment, and that's the students. And then you've got the community and
the radio audience.
And the radio audience. Now,
okay. So. Well, Becca, I think we're ready to provide the answer to our question. What are the five freedoms in the First Amendment?
Congress shall make no the freedom of speech.
Free speech.
Yeah, yeah. Or abridging the freedom of press.
Free press.
Or the right of the people
peacefully to assemble. Free people.
Petition the government for
redress of grievances. Free press.
Free speech. Free press.
Well, there you go. That was Reverend Billy and the Life After Shopping Gospel Choir. So if you got religion, speech, press, assembly, and petition, you are among the 3 or 4% elite of American citizens. Congratulations. Now, to reinforce what you all just learned, the First Amendment has really been in the news a lot lately. And so we're going to just explore with Mark some of the news items that have come up that are directly related to different aspects of the First Amendment. So yesterday was an exciting day for the journalism community. Pulitzer Prizes were awarded. And tell me about the Public Service Pulitzer Prize that went to Bart Gellman and Glenn Greenwald of the Washington Post and Guardian, and respectively. Guardian, yeah.
About the Edward Snowden's release of the NSA spying, all that data, all that information that come out of there
that came out of WikiLeaks. Yeah.
The press is the only industry that is in the First Amendment, and it's in there for a reason. Because if we don't have an independent press serving as a watchdog on our governments, university, whatever, the people cannot be informed and educated about what's going on. And if they're not educated and informed about what's going on, it cannot be a government of the people, by the people, and for the people, because the people don't know.
And not everybody was in favor of their efforts as journalists.
No, there will always be people and people within the government who will, they'll give you a lot of reasons why. This case is national security. But if you look at the data and there's a lot of information in there that you wonder, why was this national security interest, you know. You find that as a journalism educator for 40 years, I have heard people in the government tell me, and my reporters and my students, all kinds of reasons why this should not be given to the public. And most of the excuses don't really hold water.
Right. It really hurts maybe the government's reputation, not so much the security. By the way, I learned about the Pulitzer Prize by listening to Amy Goodman's show. We broadcast that at 6 p.m. here at KHOI. We're proud to do that. The next one that let's discuss is free speech. The freedom of speech has been given as a rationale for some decisions at the Supreme Court level that have greatly affected our democracy. The one that is best known is Citizens United, in which corporations were treated as people who should have the right to free speech, and the means of their free speech is money to political campaigns. So effectively, Citizens United reduced the restrictions or eliminated certain restrictions on how much corporations could give to political entities.
It essentially said corporations are people, but then it says, how much money you can give to the nonprofits that are set up for candidate campaigns.
But there was very recently another one of these.
The McCutcheon. Last week.
Yeah. Tell me about that.
Well, McCutcheon, Citizen United said people can give money to nonprofit corporations set up for campaigns. This is saying that you can give money to candidates themselves and or their committees. And it essentially says the government cannot limit how much money you can give to campaigns and/or candidates. McCutcheon was a contributor himself, and contributed to, I think, 16 campaigns, but he wanted to contribute to like 12 more. So it was.
So in that case, I don't know about the interpretation of free speech in that context.
Well, it's just one more expansion of. Corporations are people, and money is political speech.
So if a lot of money dominates the airwaves, then it's harder for the individual voice to be heard.
Which only makes it more imperative for you to partake of your First Amendment freedoms.
There you go.
Okay. Whether that's speech or petitions.
We'll touch on religion next. I think it was last week that the Supreme Court heard a case about the Affordable Care Act. Hobby Lobby was a lead participant against the requirement of the Affordable Care Act that insurers and by extension the companies that provide the insurance provide preventative care such as birth control to folks.
Because it violates the corporate owners' religious rights.
So the freedom of religion has two parts, right? Congress shall make no law. Okay, you got to help me here.
Respecting the establishment of a religion. So the government cannot establish Christianity or Islam or Judaism or any other religion as a state religion. So that's the first part. The second part is the individual's ability to have any religion, or actually it's conscience. It's you know, thinking. You know, you can think like you want to, you know, and the government can't do anything to stop you as long as you don't hurt anybody else.
I'm curious, did Hobby Lobby, they use the first part or the second part?
The second part. They were conservative Christians, but there's also another case that has to do with Mennonites that's also was argued the same day. But they're saying that I practice my religion in all areas of my life, and that includes business. And so my corporation needs to, since it's mine, I get to practice my religion through the corporate policies that I have. So
okay, so that is still kind of up in the air. We're waiting for the Supreme Court to make its decision on that one, right? And then we have freedom of assembly. And this was so beautifully illustrated for us last week here in Ames with the Iowa State revelers who got a little out of control on Tuesday night in their assembly on the streets and started.
Well, and realize it says peaceably to assemble.
Gotcha.
So that was not exactly, they were partaking of the First Amendment rights up to a point.
But what struck another one of our reporters here, I guess you would call him one of our radio personalities at KHOI, Merle Hodges, he went down on Friday night to Campus Town and to check out the scene. And he had a very very good time down there. Why don't we listen to what Merle had to say about that?
Hey, this is Merle on the Move, and I'm with KHOY. Friday night, we were out in Wells. The events that were at the clubs and, you know, the people that were in town, they still turned up out on Welp. So it had to be at least 5,000 to 10,000 people out there. Heavy police presence, but they wasn't bothered. I mean, I didn't see them bother the people we were with, you know. Just everybody's out having fun. It was great. The weather was beautiful. It was just people everywhere. You know, high five would be you walking by and just... It was peaceful. I was out there for about 4 hours, and I never went to a club one time, and it was... I had a ball. I had my crew with me. My guys were with me. It was a guy playing some drums, and then some guy just started rapping. Okay, one of our guys started rapping to the beat, you know. And as he was just rapping, he was just making up stuff as he was, you know, as he was going. And then another guy jumped in, and he started rapping, doing the same thing. And then it's called a cipher. So it ended up starting from one person, and then it was like total to be 5 or 6 guys, you know, going one after another, just, you know, freestyling, rapping. Big audience. Just a sea of people down, I mean, from one end of Welsh all the way to the come and go. You know, like waves of people. It was great. It was like a parade almost, you know what I mean? It was a carnival atmosphere. You know, it was just people out having fun. Friday night, it was more people than I've ever seen ever out on campus. And it was peaceful.
All right. That was Merle on the Move. He has a show on sports and other just chatting about life in Ames. And so that, I mean, I think that really illustrates a good use of our democracy, or a good exercise of democracy in Ames. People were allowed to assemble peacefully. There was no sense that, okay, since we had a bad time on Tuesday night, we're going to just keep all the streets cleared. Nobody can come out. It was an assertion, I think, of our First Amendment right for assembly. So,
well, and you have other areas that are, I mean, there's some more controversy about this too. Not about this particular. There's a lot of that, but the Snyder versus Phelps Supreme Court case, where essentially the Supreme Court ruled several years ago that the Westboro Baptist Church could peaceably assemble and do their protest of military funerals. And this is where the First Amendment really comes in, is when you don't agree with people. They still have a right to do this. And you've got people who are saying that the U.S. is being punished and these military people are being killed because they defend a country that allows homosexuals to be human beings,
yeah.
Be a human being just like anybody else.
Yeah.
And they don't agree with that, but the First Amendment and the Supreme Court said they have a right to do that protest.
Yeah.
And the beautiful part about it, one of the interesting things about that is motorcycle engines and the noise from that has become free speech also. Because of Phelps of the Westboro Baptist Church protesting, you would have people on motorcycles getting between them and the funeral and revving up their motorcycles so the funeral participants could not hear their cries and everything.
Democracy is not a spectator sport. Okay, and as far as petition goes, that's one that people often don't think
that's
of.
That's the one that nobody remembers. The last survey, the last 2 years of surveys, 4%, only 4% can name petition.
Yeah, but people probably do it.
I hope so.
A lot.
Essentially, that's telling the government how you represent it is how you want them to vote.
So I'm sending out email petitions all the time to my representatives.
Uh-huh.
Now, I'm not so sure they're reading them. I mean, that might be where my petition rights are being violated. It's like it goes straight into the circular file. But I have an interesting story about petition, and that is back in 2003 when I was aware that, as everybody was, that we were about to have a big war that I thought was a mistake. I was circulating a petition at Kirkwood Community College where I was teaching, and I had some students doing it with me, and people were coming up signing the petition, saying, yeah, this is just crazy for us to be going to war. You know, what did Saddam Hussein have to do with 9/11 and yada, yada. And then one day some gal came up and said, you know, I signed this petition yesterday. I want to take my name off the petition, you know, and I think we really need to support our leader. We need to support Bush. This was such a illustration of how people are willing to give up their freedoms.
Yeah. I think what we're learning here is, and if I've learned nothing over these last, 15 years I've been doing this stuff, is it's complicated. I mean, you know, what we try to do is start with the letting people just know what their freedoms are. But hopefully we can get to the point where we teach people, help people understand how if we didn't have all five of these freedoms, I mean, if you get one, if you take one away, we can't have the democracy we have today. It's just impossible. So that you have to have all five, and you have to have all five of these working together to create this democratic nation, a government of the people, by the people, for the people.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about some of the events that are still upcoming. Okay. We're going to go backwards in time.
Okay.
Thursday, there is an event in the evening at Memorial Union featuring John and Mary Beth Tinker and Kathy Kuhlmeier Fry. And I don't know about Mike Heaston.
Heaston.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I do know that John and Mary Beth Tinker were plaintiffs, would you say, mm-hmm. or petitioners?
Yes. Plaintiffs.
In the Tinker versus Des Moines case. So
yes.
This was a Supreme Court case that rose to, you know, a local case that rose to the national level back in the 60s. And what Mary Beth and John, brother and sister, they mm-hmm. wore black armbands mm-hmm. to school.
And,
is that correct?
And other people, but they were the first ones on the thing. So they wore black armbands to protest the Vietnam War, and they were expelled,
right,
for doing that. And they sued.
They sued, and mm-hmm. it went, and it reached the Supreme Court, and. Mm-hmm. What did the Supreme Court rule?
I love this thing. John won't be there this time, but Mary Beth and Kathy will be there. And the Tinker case said students do not shed their First Amendment freedoms at the schoolhouse gates. Essentially, okay. You have First Amendment freedoms in school and out. And that wasn't the case. There's more of a people telling you what to do, and you do it, you know. So what we have on Thursday at 7 o'clock, start at 7 o'clock on Thursday, is we have two of the Supreme Court cases that are the major they define the First Amendment freedoms that students have in school.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. And we had a program earlier this spring about the attorney, the Des Moines attorney, Dan Johnson,
uh-huh.
who pled that case for the Tinkers and others, and he was the Louise Nouwen Award winner, which is award for civil rights advocates mm-hmm. in Iowa. Mm-hmm. And then the Kuhlmeier case, tell me about that one.
That's Hazelwood versus Kuhlmeier. Now, Kathy Fry is her name now. She's coming up, and she will talk about Hazelwood. The Tinker case still defines First Amendment rights for students in schools. But the Hazelwood case, which is the one that Kathy sued her school district because she was on the paper, the school paper, and they wanted to do a story about abortion and the principal said no, get rid of it. So they got rid of it. They didn't. So she sued and said we ought to be able to publish what we want to publish because of our right to free press. Unfortunately, the Supreme Court did not agree with her and said that the ruling said principals or administrators can censor the press if they have a good pedagogical reason. Okay, now that's the thing that most people forget, a good pedagogical reason.
Now, and put that together with an abortion debate.
Well, and a good pedagogical reason now becomes, I don't like that, so you take it out. Instead of, you know, letting students learn through discussion, learn through reading the paper and discussing it and all that. You know, mm-hmm. No. It's, I don't like it, so take it out. And so it's been abused for many years now. And it had also, well,
Well, it sounds it sounds like it's going to be a fascinating evening for folks.
And then Mike Heaston, who is the other, he's the Student Press Law Center attorney who has worked with students over 15,000. He's been doing this for like 20 years. He's worked with over 15,000 students who have said, my school district is limiting my First Amendment rights for some reason. Okay. And there's at least 15,000 reasons. And unfortunately, he's not the only attorney there. So there's a lot of restriction of rights in schools. So
yeah. Okay. And tomorrow evening, we are not allowed to give the admission price for this event. But let us just say that there is no admission price. Okay? And you guys can figure that out. That's just some FCC laws there for on us.
You can come with your pockets empty. Is that what
exactly
you're saying?
Exactly. Yeah. Something like that. Tomorrow night at City Auditorium in Ames is a one-woman play about the life and work of Molly Ivins. It starts at 8 o'clock. And this is a play. It's been performed several times around the country.
On Broadway. Kathleen Turner did it on Broadway. Red Hot Patriot, The Kick-Ass Wit of Molly Ivins is the name of it. And Kathleen Turner did the one-woman show on Broadway. And it was, if you want to laugh, come to this. It is, it's hilarious.
That's great, because all this stuff is getting a little heavy, isn't it? We have a clip of Molly Ivins. She passed away, and this is a tribute to her.
She actually came here to Ames speaking twice at the Memorial Union, once for our First Amendment Day.
Oh, good for you. Yeah. All right. Yeah, I've been a fan of hers, or I was a fan of hers. And this little clip is from, I think, 2004. Some things, a little context for the clip. She's talking about John Henry Falk, who was a he's from your home state, just like Molly is.
Folklorist. He's marvelous.
From Texas. Yeah. And he had a lawsuit in the McCarthy era to bring an end to the Hollywood blacklist. So he is a First Amendment fighter. He was a First Amendment freedom fighter. But there's one little piece in this story. I don't know. You're from Texas. You might. She mentions a chicken snake. Have you heard of chicken snakes?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Got them all over Texas.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I didn't know whether she was just making that up or
what.
No. All right. Well, so here's a story about John Henry Falk, this freedom fighter, and a chicken snake.
John Henry was one of the heroes of a bad time in this country, the McCarthy era. And that's when he took up freedom fighting as a serious thing. Not many people know this, but before he went into being a First Amendment defender, Johnny was in law enforcement. He was in the Texas Rangers, captain. He was 6 at the time. His friend Boots Cooper, who was 7, was the sheriff. And they used to do a lot of serious law enforcement out behind the Falk family place. One day, Johnny's mama, having two such fine lawmen right there on the property, said to them, "Boys, I want y'all to go down the hen house, get that chicken snake out of the hen house." Johnny and Boots were all excited about this big assignment. They galloped down there on their brooms. They tethered their brooms. Went in the hen house, went through all the nests on the bottom shelf, no snake. They were of an age and of a size where to see up on the second shelf, they had to stand on tiptoe, see if there's a snake there. And there was. Now, I have never myself been nose to nose with a chicken snake, but I always took Johnny's word for it that it will just scare the living shit out of you. And it scared Johnny and Boots so bad they both tried to get out of the hen house at the same time, doing considerable damage to themselves and the hen house door in the process. They came trailing back up the porch all shamefaced. Miss Falk looked at him and said, "Boys, boys, what is wrong with you? You know perfectly well that a chicken snake will not hurt you." And that's when Boots Cooper said this semi-immortal thing. He said, "Yes, ma'am, but some things will scare you so bad you'll hurt yourself." Now, don't you know that's what we do again and again in this country? Get so scared So scared of a real menace, not a chicken steak. Scared of communism, scared of crime, scared of drugs, scared of illegal aliens, scared of terrorists. So scared that we hurt ourselves, make the same mistake over and over again. We think we can make ourselves safer by making ourselves less free. I tell you something, when you make yourself less free, all that happens afterward is that you are less free. You are not safer.
She's brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah. And funny.
Yep. So I'm very much looking forward to Wednesday night's, tomorrow night's entertainment over at Ames City Auditorium at 8 p.m.
Yeah. And that also brings up the second question we talked about, we started this thing with, you know, that does the First Amendment give us too much freedom? You know, in most years, it's 25 to 33%. Okay,
but say yes,
which
it
is,
does.
Says yes. A quarter of the nation, or a third of the nation, somewhere in between there, says the First Amendment gives us too much freedom. That's the amendment that if we didn't have it, we wouldn't have this nation. And in 2002, when I first started this, this is the thing that scared me. 49% said that the First Amendment gives us, half of the United States said the First Amendment gives us too much freedom. And that was right after the survey was taken in the spring, right after 9/11. And it's just what Molly Adams said, Ivan said, you don't, all you do is give up your freedom. You don't get more secure, but we are so willing to give up our security, at least what we think is security, give up our freedom, so we think we can be safe. And it just doesn't happen.
You're listening to KHOI Community Radio. This show is Heart of Iowa. I'm your host, Greta Anderson. I've been talking with Mark Witherspoon, the Greenlee College of Journalism, Greenlee School of Journalism. At ISU, professor, and he is the faculty organizer of First Amendment Days here at ISU. We're very grateful for your work and really enjoying the program so far. We're going to take a quick break and come back with April Glazer and Nick Kinkle. April is from the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Nick is from the ISU Digital Freedom Student Association. This kind of work that they're doing is just very cutting edge. It's sprung up in the last year or so. They're going to be talking about protecting ourselves from the government. But first, let's hear a little music to relax to.
Give me a piece of mind.
KHOI Community Radio. This is Heart of Iowa. We are talking about freedoms that were secured in Philadelphia back in 1787 with the First Amendment Bill of Rights. And we have been talking. I'm your host, Greta Anderson. We've been talking with Mark Witherspoon, who is a faculty organizer of, along with numerous students, of First Amendment Days here at ISU. There was an event last night featuring our other two guests here. We have April Glazer of the Electronic Frontier Foundation and Nick Kinkle from ISU Digital Freedom Student Association. Welcome to you both.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah. And I hear this was a very well-attended event about it had the word party in it. That might have been one of the reasons it was well-attended. It was a crypto party along with a panel discussion about our digital freedoms. Before we talk about April's work in this area, I just want to give her a shout-out for her her activism work with Prometheus Radio Project, which is Philadelphia-based, I just found out, in helping to propel the passage of the Local Community Radio Act. Now, our station manager, Ursula, says that KHOI and our license precedes this act, but nonetheless, she, as a Pacifica coordinator, is a coordinator of the network, is finding just a wave of new community radio stations opening up. So thank you very much, April, for your work on behalf of all my colleagues out there in various little towns around.
Well, we did it so that community radio stations just like this can bring in local voices and serve the community and talk about stories and communities that aren't represented or are underserved by corporate and government media. So I'm thrilled to be here talking about the issues that I'm now working on now that, I'm no longer at Prometheus Radio Project, but I'm so happy to see stations like this pop up around the country. And there is a new wave of community radio, and it's really a new sounding board for the voices of local communities across the country.
That gives me chills. So tell me about what the event was last night. It says government spying, threats to privacy, and your rights online. This, I believe, would be related to what we mentioned earlier, the Edward Snowden release of information about NSA spying on American citizens.
That's certainly a large part of it, and that sparked a lot of debate around the country and around the world, as it should, and we hope that debate continues, and I'm happy to see that debate happening here in Ames. Giving a little background on the event is actually really worthwhile. I came here because Nick contacted me as a student at ISU who felt that he was unable to actually talk about issues of digital privacy and online freedom. And we consider that to be kind of a violation of his First Amendment right of free speech. And I think he should tell that story. He reached out, and we wrote an open letter to ISU.
Sure. So starting last fall, so the process to form a student group at Iowa State is you need to come together with, about five people and then get approval from the Student Organization Recognition Board. And so when we went to give our little presentation, one of the things we mentioned is that we think it's really important to teach people how to use some technology that helps them have privacy and free speech online. And specifically, one of those technologies that allows anonymous communication or pseudo-anonymous seemed to be really worrisome to some of the administrators and organizers, and they told us we couldn't be involved with what they called a quote-unquote secrecy network, referring to the Tor project, and also that we couldn't be advocate or teach people how to use any kind of free software that enabled online anonymity. So obviously, being a hacker, like, that didn't really sit well with me, and I didn't think that's something that we should just accept. So we reached out to April at EFF and to see if they could help us, and they wrote a great open letter talking about how we really shouldn't demonize technology in these situations, and these are conversations that we need to be having and talking about how these are, really important issues, and it shouldn't be silenced. So we did end up forming a student group, and part of our core mission, I guess, is to make these kinds of technologies that help you enable really private communication or ensure access to information in a hostile network is accessible to everyone, regardless of their technological background.
And let me just say,
you're so articulate.
I'm sorry, just don't be threatened by the word hostile network. But yeah, when we got this letter from Nick, this email saying, you know, they won't let us have a student group, they won't even let us talk about Tor, we realized that this wasn't them trying to be malicious. This was a fact that they didn't understand these tools. They needed these tools to be demystified, in essence. And there's a problem with these new technologies because people are quick to malign them. You know, they're quick to say, you know, why do you need to be private online? Why do you need to be anonymous online? What's the purpose of that? Are you going to be doing something bad or illegal? Why would you need to do that? But really, it's freedom enhancing. And we have a long history in the United States of anonymous speech, of using pen names. The Federalist Papers were signed by a pen name. And so there, I think this is a really an extension of that, you know, that cherished aspect of freedom of speech is the ability to do that anonymously. So we wrote this open letter about why, you know, school administrations and educators should always foster conversations about privacy and anonymity and free speech and never stifle it. Because, you know, a cell phone's used to sell drugs, but that's not the fault of the cell phone, right? People use online privacy tools for things that are perhaps maybe are illegal sometimes, but that's not, we shouldn't demonize the tool because the tool actually in and of itself is freedom enhancing. And so yeah, we were really excited to write that letter and continued organizing with Nick, and he invited us to come out, or the Electronic Frontier Foundation to come out and speak. And then it became a part of Free Speech Week, and it was just so much fun, such a successful event.
Yeah, so we'd really like to help normalize the desire to have a private communication. Like, there's nothing wrong with wanting to talk just between you and someone else. You don't have to CC in the government in every email you send, right? And there's nothing weird about that. So that's part of what we want to sort of spread and demystify some of the stuff around wanting privacy online.
Wow, that's very, very interesting. And so you were helping attendees of last night's event actually download an app?
Sure. So we highlighted three major areas: email, instant messaging, and web browsing. And we went over some of the privacy challenges involved in each domain and some specific tools that people can use to help get some of their privacy back right now. Even though there's a lot of threats, there are some practical steps people can take that you can do pretty well. So yeah, it was just an opportunity for people to come out and learn some practical skills.
And the word threats is really key here, because I think by threat we've learned that the U.S. government are actually perhaps the people that are threatening our rights to free speech. And that's because, as you know, as what has been made popularized by the leaks that that Edward Snowden have revealed, and then have been publicized, as we've mentioned, by journalists like Glenn Greenwald and Laura Petraeus. You know, these leaks have really brought to the forefront the issue of the fact that the government is bulk collecting all of our online communications, our phone calls. We've received orders, things have become transparent now, or have been disclosed, like orders from a secret court that say that, you know, Verizon is required to hand over all phone calls going into or from the United States on an ongoing daily basis. Under these conditions, freedom of speech isn't really possible, because if you know that what you're saying is being listened to, if you know that it's being collected and you could possibly be criminalized for it later, or like assessments of your character can be drawn, you're not going to say what you would say otherwise. These are the chilling effects of a First Amendment violation, and we argue that speech is chilled under mass surveillance. It's hard to organize politically. It's hard to participate meaningfully in democracy.
And so, April, you and your organization have filed a lawsuit.
Yes, we are suing the NSA. We have two cases right now where we're suing the NSA, and one of those cases does explore First Amendment grounds and those chilling effects that I was talking about. We're representing 22 very diverse organizations that all claim that under conditions of mass surveillance and bulk collection, they're unable to do their work. These are groups that represent political refugees fleeing from oppression in another country, groups that represent victims of torture, or people that are just trying to organize for change in a situation where they feel that not everyone is necessarily on their side, and that's okay. But the fact is that after the disclosures of what the NSA is doing and after it hit the headlines, people have stopped organizing. People have stopped showing up for meetings. You know, a lot of these groups, or some of the groups represent people who are members of an informal economy, say if they're migrant workers. They've stopped organizing for change because they're chilled. They're afraid. Their freedom of assembly and their freedom of speech has been compromised as a result of these revelations. And the thing is that they were compromised before. We just didn't know about it. That's the thing. You know, it's not like this was happening as soon as Snowden revealed the leaks. This was happening for years and years and years. And only now we know. What we know is a product of whistleblowers.
Right. And, well,
so many things come up, I'm sure. Yeah, it's a big issue right now, and we really need to have these discussions.
Well,
this can't be a news story that gets swept under the rug, and people just say, "Oh, this is another atrocious thing that you know a large government is doing." No surprise, and walk away into next year and another host of new news stories. This needs to be something that we maintain awareness about, that we continue to educate ourselves on, and we continue to fight. Because if not, then really the foundations of our democracy are under threat.
And I really love how the two of you are using both very traditional means of fighting back against this threat to our liberty and very creative kinds of solutions. Just like the motorcycles at the funerals, it seems to take a whole array of methods.
Yeah, and just to say, I mean, we are fighting this, of course, in Congress. We're suing the NSA. We hope for impact litigation that will go all the way to the Supreme Court. But the truth is that you can circumvent surveillance by changing your behavior. When there are secret laws, it's hard for you to change your behavior to make sure that you're not breaking them or that you're not under threat by them. But now that these laws are not secret, we can change our behavior. We can change the way we use technology. And that's why groups like Nick's group, the ISU Digital Freedom Group, are so essential right now, because policy is a long-term solution. That's going to take years. But in the meantime, we can start using technology that's not run by large corporations, that's free software, and that enables actually a level of privacy and anonymity that we don't have in the most available corporate tools.
Okay. Well, I'm going to have that be the last word. It's fascinating, your work, and thank you so much for coming in. Thank you for your work and for coming in today.
Please
thank you.
Come to Nick's group if you're an ISU student.
That's right. And Nick, tell us how people can get in touch with you.
Yeah, sure. So you should send us an email at isu-digital-freedom@riseup.net.
Okay. And if you're just Googling ISU Digital Freedom, maybe you can get there?
Yeah, or using DuckDuckGo or Startpage.
Oh, yeah, don't use Google.
Yes, if you're searching on the internet.
There are alternatives, and it's important that we talk about those. Okay. We don't have to just use the big services.
All right. And April, you have a blog as well as doing your work?
Well, I would recommend people visit EFF.org and sign up for our newsletter. We send something out a couple times a month, and we analyze the leaks and on a host of other digital rights issues like copyright reform and patent reform and you know, things that are happening around the world, bloggers that are jailed, things like that. We blog multiple times a day, and journalists actually come to our website to be informed and to find where the story's at. So sign up for our newsletter, visit our website, and I blog as well on our site frequently and for other news organizations.
Okay, and those links, as well as links to the remaining events of First Amendment Week, are going to be on our website, khoifm.org. And I think we can have a little outro reprise of thank you all so much
thank
for
you.
Coming.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
You've been listening to KHOI's Heart of Iowa, and our guests have been Mark Witherspoon, Nick Kinkle from ISU, both of those guys from ISU, and April Glazer from Electronic Frontier Foundation. I'm Greta Anderson, your host. Thanks to Becca Brown for her engineering work, and thanks to Leo Kottke for these soothing tunes on our outro. KHOI is community radio. That means it's people-driven. If you want to join the production team, you can just walk in the door and tell us your ideas and sit down in a production meeting, and we'll be ready to go. As always, your participation as listener is what makes KHOI possible. We thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.
When I was speaking at a university in Lansing, Michigan, not long ago, the home of the Lansing Lug Nuts, they had a giant statue of a lug nut right there in downtown Lansing. It's just fabulous. I'm not much of an art critic, but it looked to me exactly like a really big lug nut. Anyway, I had been talking to the students about politics, which of course is enough to depress anybody. And one of them stood up earnestly and said, "Who now holding public office do you think would make a truly great president?" And I said, And I finally figured out that I was starting from the wrong end. It doesn't matter. That's the unimportant part. The important part is at this end. It's where we start to make this a better country. I mean, I don't care what fool they put in office. We just got to rebuild the whole system. Right. That's how it's going to change. From us, not them. And I know y'all know that the root of the rot in politics is money, that usual suspect. And getting rid of the system of legalized bribery that we call politics in this country is probably step number one. But there is something about politics that I did come to preach to y'all today about, and I am just as serious as a joke about this. Y'all need to have more fun. You really, truly do. The man who taught me how to freedom fight was the beloved John Henry Fulk. Now, y'all know that in order to have fun while fighting for freedom, you just have to exercise your imagination. And sometimes a little beer helps, too. Some of y'all might remember a great political action here a few years back. The legislature took a fit of communism and made Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday a state holiday. It was a package deal. They kept Confederate Heroes Day. But, of course, it upset the Ku Klux Klan, and they announced they were coming to the Capitol to have a big march. And all of us civil libertarians, of course, are obliged, solemnly obliged, to defend the right of any nincompoop to stand up and spew whatever vicious drivel he wants to. So there we were, supporting the KKK and their right to march. And we were all depressed about it, and we got to thinking there must be a better way. So, you know, we don't have enough cluckers right here in Austin to have a good march. They had to be bussed in from Waco and Vidor. And they got off the buses wearing their little pointy hats on their little pointy heads and commenced a march up Congress Avenue, where they were greeted by hundreds of Austinites who mooned them as they marched. They had a really nice effect, kind of like a wave in a baseball stadium. Now, that is the kind of political action, I believe, that we can all get behind. And I just want to urge you all, as you get out there and freedom fight and raise hell about various issues, of which there is never any shortage, have a good time. Have a good time while you're fighting for freedom. First of all, we don't always win, and it might get to be the only fun you'll ever have. And second of all, it's a better way to live. Thank you.
KHOI Community Radio is excited and proud to announce the completion of our new broadcast and production studios. Special thanks goes out to the wonderful work of many volunteers and your support. We invite you to join us for the grand opening of the studios on Saturday, April 19th from 6 to 9 p.m. at KHOI, located at 410 Douglas Avenue. That's the old Pantorium building in downtown Ames. Refreshments will be provided. Please mark your calendars. Be part of this historic celebration. That's April 19th, 6 p.m. at KHOI. See you there.
Hey, this is Ryan, and I work for FedEx. I'm bringing a whole bunch of new computers into KHOI. Something big must be happening here.